Following is a paid program on 630 WLAP.
Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Welcome to another special edition of the Tom Dupree Show. We're rocking and rolling at the Fields family reunion. We've got another cousin joining us this hour, another entrepreneurial cousin with lots of good stories.
Slightly entrepreneurial.
Slightly. Will Galtney from Houston, Texas is joining us this second hour.
William F. Galtney.
Junior was.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Take it away, Tom.
All right. So this song is Rod Stewart and the Faces, came out 1971. And I'm trying to put it in kind of Will's wheelhouse a little bit there. So Will Galtney is my older cousin, and he's always been older than me. And I've known him all my life. And he grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, went to Ole Miss, and did some interesting things. Spent some time in Corinth, Mississippi, at my grandmother's house, and that's when we would typically cross paths. And Will developed a skill for tennis, which put him on the Ole Miss tennis team, where he did quite well. And so let me ask you something. Did you go to Ole Miss in 69? Was that the fall of 69?
It was the fall of 1970.
1970.
Archie Manning was a senior.
Okay. That's Ole Miss. My next question was going to be. So Archie Manning, for those of younger folks who don't know, he was
who
quite.
Who doesn't know Archie Manning?
A lot of people. You'd be amazed. And
but they know Eli and Peyton.
They know Eli. That's his son and both of his sons. And so just talk a little bit about Ole Miss football at that time, because you were a tennis player, but and good, quite good. But, you know, football kind of overshadowed everything.
It did then, and it does now. The Ole Miss football team was ranked, I want to say, 3 or 4 in the country at one point during that year, my freshman year, Archie's senior year. And we had a little bit of a setback. Archie broke his arm.
Yeah.
And I don't think too many people can play football this day and age with a broken arm, but he did.
With his throwing arm?
No, it wasn't his throwing arm. But it was his other arm, and he had a bandage on it that was looked like a spacesuit on it. So we ended up going to Sugar Bowl that year, but we kind of faltered a little bit in the rankings after Archie suffered his injury.
You all had a receiver. I remember his name, Vernon Studdard.
Ooh,
you remember that guy?
I remember that guy. I do.
Yeah, and I don't know where he was from. Just that name sticks out.
And they had a guy named Floyd Franks too.
Yeah, I don't. That one I don't remember.
Yeah, we kind of.
Did y'all have a basketball team back then?
Not like Kentucky, okay, or Louisville, or anybody else, probably.
So, talk a little bit about when you were. I mean, we used to come visit y'all at East Ridge Drive in Jackson. Y'all had a jukebox that was so cool. We could just sit there and play records. And where did that thing come from? I don't know.
You know, I can't remember what I did yesterday. But
okay.
I don't know where that jukebox came.
But do you remember having
it? I remember that jukebox.
Yeah.
It was.
Y'all had all the latest records on
it. I know.
There.
I don't know what happened. I wish I had that jukebox.
Well, who was putting those records on? Somebody had to be.
I think
it
was my mother.
Was it really?
Yeah, she was pretty hip back then.
Gloria Galtney, who's still with us, and she lives in Houston.
How old is she, Will? She's
91.
Yeah.
She's in the high command,
wonderful
right?
lady from Indianola, Mississippi.
That's and, right.
So Uncle Bill, Uncle Dave, and my mother all grew up in Corinth. And my grandmother, Virginia Galtney, lived there on Fillmore Street. And Will was, going to Ole Miss, playing tennis. And he would come to Corinth in the summer and teach tennis lessons at the country club and live at Granny's house. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was a real trip, I'll tell you that. I remember Granny had been a widow for like 40 years.
Right.
Her husband died in 1945, and this would have been around early 1970s. So after the first couple of days, Granny came to me and she said, "I'm going to have to kick you out of the house." She said, "You've been taking too many showers, you're drinking too much milk, and you're watching TV too much, and you're going to have to leave." And I said, I kind of negotiated with her. I got to stay a little later, longer. And by then the summer, she was crying when I left.
Yeah.
But she was kind of set in her ways.
Oh, she was.
I told Granny, I said, I'm out there teaching tennis from 8 in the morning to about 8 at night, and I come home and get to her house to have lunch, and I said, I got to take a shower. I mean, the clothes are completely wet.
Did you sleep upstairs in that bedroom?
No, I wouldn't go up there. It was too scary.
Yeah. So what, did you sleep way in the back?
I slept in the back, yeah.
Yeah. And she had it upstairs in this house, and there was this fan that, probably could have propelled an airboat in the Everglades or something. It was just, you stood next to it, you got pulled into it just about, and it would. Yeah,
it was scary up there. I didn't go up there too much.
I was up there one time, and I found all these old pictures of your dad and Uncle Dave, football pictures and stuff. They had just been left there, I guess. So, they were kind of untouched since the 1940s. So, you guys lived in Jackson. I don't know. Where'd you go to high school?
Went to Murrah High School.
Okay. And then tell me, how did your interest in tennis develop? Because I don't know of anybody else in this family that's ever played tennis to the level that you play and still play. And what got you going on tennis?
That's a good question. But I started when I was probably about 10 years old, and we had a really nice tennis club in Jackson at the time. And it was one of those deals that, you went there in the morning, your parents dropped you off, and you played tennis in the morning, you had a couple of cheeseburgers at lunch, and played in the afternoon, and then the game picked you up. And then you started playing tennis tournaments around the South. And it was kept me out of trouble.
If it had been a basketball court, you probably would have been starting for the Celtics or something. I mean,
I couldn't jump. That was the problem. Well,
neither could Larry Bird. So you develop this real interest in and love of and dexterity in tennis. And what would you say, and it's interesting, what was the part of your game that you felt you were the best at in tennis?
Yeah. Back then in tennis, it was all serve and volley.
Okay.
So, I was fortunate enough that I was about 6'3" and had a pretty good serve, could spin it both ways.
Right.
And then come to the net, lumber my way to the net. If I had to stay on the back court like they do now and hit 25 balls before you win the point, it would have been a short tennis career.
Were you playing primarily on clay or grass or hard surface?
I grew up playing on Rubico, which is kind of a clay surface, and then I morphed into playing on hard court in college.
Right. Yeah, most of those were like that. So what made – I know your parents met at Ole Miss, and, you know, Uncle Dave, well, he went to Mississippi State, but he went to Ole Miss Law School. Your dad, of course, went to Ole Miss. Was there ever any doubt in your mind where you were going to go to college?
Never, never. I didn't even know there was another college out there. I had a few friends that went to other places, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? I mean, you're supposed to be going to Ole Miss. So I was big Ole Miss guy from day one. I used to, you know, they played all their home games in Jackson at the time, not at the university like they do now, which is much better at the university. But I'd hang around and get autographs after, you know, 6 years old, getting autographs outside really? The locker room.
That was – who was that – who was it? Vaught? Was he the coach back then?
Yeah, Johnny Vaught.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't even know any of the players. That Babe Parilli, but no, that was before you.
Chunk and Charlie Connerly played there. Okay. He's a few years older than me. Jake Gibbs, great All-American player.
Right.
You know, they had some great teams back then.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Babe Parilli was at Kentucky. My mother used to go to the games, and he would, like, fade back 40 yards. Anyway.
Throw it 100.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so you end up at Ole Miss as a freshman, and you let's talk about what did you study at Ole Miss, or did you study? I mean, I'm joking. Tell me about your college experience.
The first couple of years were typical.
You remember?
I was barely in college.
Yeah.
And then I ended up getting serious about a young lady there and got married between my junior and senior year. So
I remember that.
So
in Louisville, Mississippi.
Yes, that's right.
Spelled like Louisville for you listeners in Louisville, Kentucky.
But so got married early, got serious about school, and stuck around and got a graduate degree as well. So because I didn't know what I was going to do after I graduated.
Sure. So talk about your first job. Wasn't it down somewhere in Hattiesburg or Biloxi or someplace like that?
I did an internship down in Biloxi, okay. But that was 6 months. That was kind of –
See, I followed you more than you think.
Yeah, that was interesting experience. Biloxi's
city manager or something like that.
Worked for the mayor down there. Okay. Yeah, and then did a short stint in Starkville, Mississippi, which I'm shocked that I ended up in the.
That it's even in the same state.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Mississippi State, for the listeners, is there, which is Ole Miss's arch rival, although we didn't really consider him a rival at the time.
No.
But, and then ultimately, after a few years in Mississippi, moved to Houston, Texas.
That's right. And you're. What? Say it again.
You want to know why I moved to Houston?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Okay. This is my standard story. So. I moved to Houston for health reasons.
Okay. Tell me. You faced me.
Well, you know, the reason I moved for health reasons, I was starving to death in Mississippi.
Okay. All right, now we know. Your father and family moved out there. Your dad was an investment banker in Houston, specializing in hospital municipal finance, did a ton of hospital deals. So – tell me about how you first got into the insurance industry.
Yeah. Well, I started at the very bottom. You know, I was in Louisville, Mississippi, driving around looking for somebody building a home, you know, $30,000 home or something, and I'd call them at night and write their insurance, then their cars. And then I moved to Houston, and I started to work for a company called Marsh McLennan, which was the largest insurance broker in the world. They still are. So it was a little bit of a culture shock going from riding the corner grocery store or drugstore to I think the first account that I wrote when I was involved in when I moved to Houston was Shell Oil.
So Marsh, for those who don't understand the, you know, insurance industry, they're a broker, right? And
correct.
But people who work for that broker are kind of like salesmen, or, you know, guys that go out, and the coverages that they have to write are very specific and niche to some degree. And so that you might write a whole range of insurance coverage that could be placed with a variety of different companies, depending upon their appetite for certain types of risk. Am I describing?
Yeah, that's you're an intermediary between the customer, the buyer, and the insurance company.
Okay. So, having done that, you're what, in your 20s by now? Or
I was 27, something like okay. that, when I moved to Houston.
All right. So you did this, and we're calling on. So did you have to go out and find your own clients, or did they tend to come to the company and you just had to take care of? How'd that work?
When I moved out there, they gave me an office and a phone book. You know, there was phone books back then.
Yeah.
And they said, okay. Yeah, I helped on a few accounts, like I mentioned, but essentially I was a producer.
Yeah.
And I had to go out and produce business.
Okay.
So I ended up specializing in healthcare related clients.
What made you get drawn to healthcare?
Well, my father was in that space, so he had some connections that I was able to tap into.
Okay.
And then I started writing big doctor groups around the United
yeah,
States.
I remember that.
Mostly emergency room physicians. They were the first amalgamators, if you will, in the physician aggregation side.
So they banded together instead of lone practitioners.
Right.
They became groups.
Correct.
And as such, they had bargaining power to buy bulk insurance and things, that, and they could form their own group and their own, what do they call it, captive thing, and buy their insurance cheaper that way. Is that correct?
Yeah, they certainly, some of these groups were, you know, had 1,000 physicians in them. So they definitely had some purchasing power.
Let me ask you a question. So every business and every medical type practice, which is a business, has its own distinct risk profile. And somebody's got to price that and figure out, you know, what do we charge for this? I mean, the guys that have always fascinated me in your business are the underwriters. They're the guys that, I don't know what they use to figure this stuff out, you know, but they seem like kind of wizards with black boxes and stuff. It may not be that complicated, or maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, there's an awful lot of analytics to it, and there's underwriting tools. It's, you know, driven by data and you know, on their, you know, software packages. So yeah, it's there's a science to it.
It's statistical.
Yes.
And it's
actuaries, or
the experience of claims and things like that.
Exactly.
Do they ever get it wrong?
Yeah. You know, if you're a good broker, you know, you usually are getting, you're trying to, you know, in the real world, you're trying to make the underwriter have a small profit. So you have to negotiate hard for your clients, not making a large profit.
So you try to get the price down on behalf of your client. He's trying to get it up, and you're kind of in a little bit of a healthy back
and forth. There's some healthy tension there.
Okay. Kind of like my marriage.
I am sitting right here.
All right. So you're with we got just a little bit of time, but I want to get into this. You're with this big company, and you're doing this, and somewhere in there, you have this aha moment where you say, I could do this myself.
Yeah, it didn't take very long. Probably I was with Marsh maybe two and a half years.
And are you kidding me? So, like, you're in your 30s and you're figuring out how to do this on your own?
I left there when I was, I might have been 30, right at 30. And I had a fairly big, I had a large number of clients at that point. I didn't have any restrictions on leaving.
No non-compete.
No non-competes at the time. They didn't have those. So I set my own shingle out and got on an airplane and started traveling around the country. And
in England, too.
Well, you know, we had a lot of large clients that sometimes, like you said, they had their own insurance company. So at times we would be buying reinsurance, which, you know, right, supported their insurance companies. And that necessitated going, you know, to London and to Scandinavia, Germany,
the
France,
big riders, Lloyd's and others.
Buying reinsurance for some of our clients.
Interesting. You're going to.
I can start a little music and get us on out of here. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show with our special guest, Will Gautney of Houston, Texas.
We're going to talk about an airplane ride I remember about.
We're just getting started with the stories.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. More from Highlands, North Carolina, a special edition of the Tom Dupree Show. Stay tuned.
Your week.
Bipartisan agreement on infrastructure.
How are they going to pay for it?
COVID positive migrants released.
Spreading the virus.
If you're vaccinated, you must wear a mask.
Every federal government employee.
Every day.
It's not science.
You can kiss my mask.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds? Racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
iHeartRadio Earth is here with little tips for a healthier planet. This spring, you can share your own observations about nature with scientists and play a critical role in scientific discovery by adding to their data collection. Discover more about citizen science programs such as monitoring weather, observing plants and animals, and more. Brought to you by iHeartRadio Earth and the National Environmental Education Foundation. To find more tips for smarter, sustainable living, or to take action in your own community, go to iHeartRadio.com/Earth.
Hello, I'm Mackenzie with Exact Data. I'm excited to share how our team can help your business with its customer acquisition goals. Exact Data has been helping businesses of all sizes find new customers for over 20 years. With over 4,000 unique filters, you're sure to find the most targeted emails, postal addresses, and phone numbers fit for your business. Want a list of new homeowners in your area or looking to reach self-employed business owners? Maybe you're looking for people passionate about charitable causes or a list of medical professionals in your area. We can help. At Exact Data, we have the perfect list to help you grow your business. For pricing, text LIST to 606-MY-LEADS. Remember, text LIST to 606-695-3237, which spells 606 My Leads, and we'll reply with the information you need to get leads for your business. Again, text LIST to 606 My Leads, and you'll be well on your way to reaching your sales goals.
Our weekend is kicking off with a mostly cloudy sky on your Saturday. It's the final day of July, by the way. Late day showers, a possibility rolling in from the northwest. We've got temperatures today into the upper 70s. Few showers into early on Sunday. Then a mix of sunny clouds, upper 70s to around 80 into the afternoon on Sunday. That's the first day of August. Much cooler than normal. That'll carry us into early next week. From the WKYT First Alert Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Chris Bailey.
Broadcasting live 24-7 from the Red State Barbecue Studios, this is News Radio 630 WLAP.
Now serving F27 at DMV window number 16.
Okay, Rose, we're second in line.
Perfect, Rose. You remembered the birth certificate? Yes, and we have our electric bill.
Excellent. We'll be Real ID ready in no time.
Real ID ready to visit our grandson, Ricky, at Fort Bragg, then fly to New Orleans for Jazz Fest.
Pardon me, are you talking to yourself?
I'm sorry. I guess I am.
Talk yourself into Real ID readiness by May 3rd, 2023. Make a plan at dhs.gov/realid.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the second half of the second hour of the Tom Dupree Show, special edition coming to you from Highlands, North Carolina, with our guest, Will Gaultney of Houston, Texas.
So, Will, this song came out, I'd say your senior year in high school, 1969. It's a big time in music, wasn't it?
Good song.
Yeah, a lot of, y'all may have had it on that jukebox. I don't know how your mother kept up with everything. So, you were traveling a bunch. And I just have heard this story about this plane trip.
So you end up, you throw your sports coat or your suit jacket in a overhead. And you get out and you're like running to some place. And all of a sudden you look down and there's honey all over the Did that really happen? Where were you?
I can't remember where I was, but I bought this can of molasses.
Oh, it was yours.
It was in, and I put it in my suitcase. Back then, they were these, like saddlebags, you know, these yeah. suitcases that you just threw over your shoulder. And I put a can of molasses in one side, and I threw it on my back to try to, I had to make a connection on another flight, and I got about 25 yards out from the boarding area, and I looked down and I had molasses all over me. And so I went into the bathroom and I opened my suitcase to try to find another pair of pants and another shirt and everything, and the molasses had contaminated everything.
Gosh.
I found a pair of pants or something like that, and there that didn't have too much molasses on it. It was bad.
Yeah,
was
you'll bad. Never do that again.
No, it was.
Yeah.
See, a much better story to that would have been that somebody else had put honey in.
Yeah, I thought that's what I thought. Some lady put it up there.
I wish.
And it had gotten all over your, and it was the last time you ever flew commercial. But see, that would have been a great story.
Yeah. Well. I couldn't afford to do it at the time, but it was a can.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a pretty big can. For some reason, I stuck it in a side pocket. I didn't think it would
order it. Let them ship it next
time. Yeah.
So you begin to figure out that, you can do this on your own, that you can, in order to figure that out, you would have had to identify the different components that go into writing insurance, which, of course, you did, and how we can secure these things without having to go through a big company to do it. And so just describe a little bit of the mechanics of putting that together.
Well, I was fortunate enough to jump into the medical malpractice space when it was really just the corporate practice of medicine was just really exploding. So we figured out a way to make it easier for the underwriters to price the business. Instead of doing it by doc, we use different types of exposure information like patient visits and things of this nature. So we kind of helped change the way the business was underwritten. And we just went out there and wrote as much big corporate physician groups in the United States as we could. We also were involved with HCA, some big hospital systems as well, where we placed reinsurance for their captive insurance company. So we were on the higher end of the premium, you know, type of accounts.
And rather than paying a rake, if you will, that's a Las Vegas term, a cut of your profits or your cash flow to a large entity that's really not doing anything but just collecting the check, you were able to basically keep those fees in-house and not have to pay them out.
Well, we created our own claims organization that handled the claims for the insurance companies as opposed to the insurance companies doing it. And we also, the insurance business is pretty cyclical. In other words, there are times when the prices are going sky high and then they just go down, different insurance
because of competition.
Competition, want more market share. So we ended up forming our own insurance companies when the market was hard. In other words, when the prices were way up there. So we were able to help our clients get a better rate than at market at the time. And there were carriers that would either go out of business or get out of the Med-Mal business because it was volatile. There was one company called St. Paul Insurance Company.
And St. Paul Fire and Marine.
Yeah, they were the largest Med-Mal writers in the country at one point, and they just got out totally. Yeah. So we set up our own insurance companies to stabilize the business to a certain extent, but also to take advantage of the hard markets. And we probably did as well on the underwriting side over the years as we did in the insurance brokerage business.
Right. So the underwriting is really kind of the way it is. You're either at one or above or below one, like 0.7 or something. And that's how much you're paying out in claims per dollar of premium, correct?
Right. The loss, they call that the loss ratios.
Yes, loss ratios. And so, and now some insurance winds up every year. And then some insurance has a longer, what they would call tail, which means that the exposure is out there a lot longer. Say Warren Buffett, for instance. He's, a lot of people think that Berkshire is just a big investment company. But what he's really doing is investing the insurance float for a long tail insurance practice that has a very long duration of when the claims might get paid. And he's got that money for a long time. So he's invested it in stocks over the years and, you know, done extremely well. And he hasn't ever, that I can imagine or hear of, gotten tagged really hard by some several billion dollar claim. From, you probably know about him better than I do.
Well, they're huge, and they dictate the market at times, particularly when it's hard. You know, there's less capacity out there. So, yeah, they've had years where they've paid a lot, multi-billion dollar claims.
So you just don't hear it. Well, yeah, no, he talks about it in his annual meeting.
Yeah.
Have you ever met him? Do you know Warren Buffett?
I don't know him personally, no, but I do know and have had some interaction with Ajit Jain, which is his number one
very
guy
smart
on the
guy.
Insurance side. Yeah.
So what were your dealings, if you don't mind? Were you sending some reinsurance business to them or that kind of thing?
Well, I would say back in the 80s, mid-80s, late 80s, when Berkshire was a lot smaller than they are now, I dealt with Ajit on a couple of big risks, and before he could bind them up, he had to get approval from Mr. Buffett.
Did he really?
So, yeah, I don't think that's the case any longer, but this is back, you know, 30 plus years ago.
I called them one time and I got him on the phone.
There you go.
There was a bond issue in Houston. It was a housing deal, and I was working at Rotan Mosley, and they had put the money in GICs with Citibank, and this was not a good thing. And so we were pricing Berkshire on what they would pay on a GIC, and everybody else was paying like 9 or 10%, and they were paying 7. They didn't need the money. So it's an interesting story. I don't think we'll ever see that again in our lifetimes or our kids' lifetimes. So what have you found? And insurance fascinates me. We could talk all day about it. Are you more, in your way of approaching the business, are you more get in when it's hard and then sell out when it's starting to turn ugly? Or do you keep certain elements of the practice to produce cash flow year in, year out, or both? Seems like the brokerage would be a year in, year out. You're going to do it in hard markets, soft markets. The underwriting thing, you get a nice book of business, and maybe you sell it when prices get real fat for it. I mean, that's just my thought.
Yeah, the underwriting side, you want to try to keep your combined, you know, your expense ratio down as low as you can because it is cyclical. And over the years, we like to write as much as we can in the hard market. I've been fortunate to be on a publicly traded insurance reinsurance company called Everest Reinsurance for 25 years since.
Symbol is RE.
After we bought it from Prudential Re.
New York Stock Exchange, RE.
Yeah, 1996. And that business, we have a very extremely low expense ratio, but you got to write business in the hard market and the soft market. We try to be as diversified as we can to write, 20 or 25 different product lines. So hopefully when the market's soft, some of those product lines are, stronger than others. So now on the brokerage side, you're writing the business, whether it's in a hard market or a soft market.
Let me ask you a question. I know in recent years you have sort of ventured into private equity and some other avenues of businesses. What do you see as promising? Kind of, the economy is way different than it's ever been in any of our lifetimes. It's very weird in some ways. Other ways, it's normal, but I would still call it a little weird. But, what are you seeing as some things that you all might have invested in or would like to invest in that look interesting going forward?
In the insurance space.
It doesn't have to be. It could be anything. But insurance is fine.
So we've been doing more investing private equity and insurance and healthcare for probably the last 15 years since I sold the main company. And we love the brokerage space. We've been in the wholesale brokerage space, retail, niche, med-mal, employee benefits. All of that business has been extremely good. We've sold most of what we owned in that space. I wish we had some of them back because the multiples now are at an all-time high.
Sure.
Buyers are paying up for companies at 14 times EBITDA, as much as 14 times EBITDA.
That's kind of unheard multiples for insurance, right?
Yeah. So we're looking at a few deals right now to jump back in the game, try to take advantage of it.
All right. I meant to get to this in the first hour, but I want to get to it now. You've been very generous with your alma mater, University of Mississippi, and you're a regular visitor to Oxford for football games and other kinds of things. And Ole Miss, it seems, has become a really remarkably attractive destination for people to go to college, but retirement and things of that nature. Just talk a little bit about Oxford, North Mississippi in general, whatever you'd like to say about the area.
Yeah. Well, when I left Mississippi, I spent about 20 years just grinding, raising family, got a lot of kids.
I remember going to those Astros games and you all would sit in the outfield at $2 a ticket and bring your own hot dogs.
Hey,
and
you got to start somewhere.
Now he's an owner of the Astros.
Yeah. Former owner.
Yeah.
But about 20 years ago, one of the chancellors over there at the time, a guy named Robert Kayat, got me back in the Ole Miss scene, and I've enjoyed participating over there with some projects, and have been a benefactor over there for probably the last 20 years, and trying to in the academic side and in athletics, principally the tennis program over there.
Sure, I know. There's a museum that's got some antiquities and things that you had talked about in an article that I read that a lot of people didn't even know they had it. And it was kind of like uncovering some hidden treasure kind of thing.
Yeah, they have a huge Greek and Roman antiquity collection.
Really?
I think second maybe to Harvard or somebody like that, one of the big Ivy League schools. And we built a space for him to display some of that those antiquities instead of leaving them in a vault.
Oh yeah, that's great.
We bought a home over there, and you know, we have some farming interests. I try to get my kids connected to Mississippi as much as possible.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, you've been a great representative for the state of Mississippi, even though you've lived in Houston for 40-something years, you know, 50 years almost.
No, we're not quite that long.
Okay, well.
How about 40?
Yeah, 40. And let's talk a little bit about Houston. That's an interesting place. I lived there myself in the 80s. It is one of the most adaptable places. Of course, it was always, there's weather issues, natural disaster type things. You know, you have had that. But the city just seems to persevere. And, you know, oil gets messed up. Well, they just figure out something else to do. And it's really almost as much of a medical kind of situation there as it is oil, and it has been for a long time. But you know, you continue to be a citizen of the city of Houston and very involved there.
Yeah, I love Houston. It's a much more diversified economy now than it was, you know, in the 80s when it was principally oil and gas. It's, you know, it's a vibrant business community. And, you know, it's, if you work hard and you've got some great ideas, the barriers to entry there for young people and you know, are very, very promising. So,
yeah,
love Houston, family, all my kids. Well, I've got three of my five boys that are living there. Two of them are working with me, and it's the sports teams have kind of cooled off a little bit there over the last few years.
As long as the Astros have Altuve, they're going to be interesting, and that guy's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, that's what all we have right now, the Astros. The Rockets and the Texans are on a different
tough time
trajectory.
So, well, I mean, you know, it'll come back at some point, and you know, Will, I just, you know, I know in our family, you know, we've all looked up to you for a lot of years in terms of the things that you've been able to accomplish. And now you're more laid back than you used to be. And that's really good too, you know. Used to be pretty intense. You still are, but not the way you once were. But no, it's been great. I mean, I'm happy for you. You've done a good job. And I know it's been interesting.
I know it's the Tom Dupree Show, but I've always called Tom Tommy.
Yeah.
And it's been a pleasure. Spent some time with you. Love you.
Thank you.
Your family. Love what you're doing. You got a great wife.
And, yeah, she's pretty good. It's
good to be good to share some stories with you today.
Thank you.
I remember playing tennis one time against the University of Kentucky, and you were out there watching us.
Yeah, that's been a long time ago.
We got a W that day, as I recall.
Yeah, so thanks for doing this.
You bet. Thank you.
The beginning of this song reminds me of kind of creepy second floor granny music. I mean, it's just
Led Zeppelin, man. That was their first album.
I know. I'm teasing, though. Will, thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show with our special guest, Will Galtney of Houston, Texas. We've been coming to you from Highlands, North Carolina. That's a wrap for this week. We hope you'll go to our website, DupreeFinancial.com, if you want to listen to more of the Tom Dupree Show. And as always, we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Messing around every guy in
town, putting me down, thinking I'm some. To get the jab or not.
We're like, that's your decision.
It's a decision many are mulling over.
We're intelligent people.
Hear about it.
It sounds like a Starbucks order.
Then talk about it.
Half-vac, full-vac, no-vac.
On News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.